Hi everybody, this is Dr. Ron Kaiser with your October 2011 podcast from the Mental Health Gym. As you know, at the Mental Health Gym, we tend to emphasize positive psychology, but sometimes we have to deal with the fact that not everything that happens in life is positive. And today's podcast addresses the effects of lousy things happening, including abuse and trauma. In a previous podcast, I identified the question of what's it got to do with me as being one of the critical questions that help to form appropriate thinking processes in order to move ahead and gain emotional health. I believe that that question, what does it have to do with me, is particularly important when bad things happen, including questions that need to be raised by victims of abuse, trauma, or general bad things happening, such as being exposed to an overly critical supervisor, an overly critical parent, having to deal with bullying, things of that nature. One of the unfortunate things that happen when people have been abused or mistreated in any particular way is that it can impact upon self-esteem. Individuals who have suffered from child abuse and trauma may blame themselves. In some cases, they may do some self-defeating behaviors such as drug abuse, promiscuity, and failing to pursue their best possible hopes of achievement. Now, it's very important, I believe, under those circumstances to remove the issue from yourself and place the blame directly on the person who has done the inappropriate behavior. In other words, what does that have to do with you if you were the victim? Now, in working with individuals who have been traumatized or mistreated in any particular way, one of the critical things that I might point out to them is the question of when you drive someplace, if you go to the mall or to some other place where there are a number of cars, do you lock your car? Most people will reply, of course I do. And I would ask, you know, why do you do that? The most typical answer is because I don't want to get my car stolen. Then I would ask, well, why would a thief necessarily steal your car? I mean, there are lots of cars in the world. Why would you be particularly concerned about it? And frequently they'll appropriately say, well, I don't think they're necessarily looking for my car, but if it's easy to steal, they're going to steal it. If my car is locked, if I don't have a lot of things visible through the window, the car thief may very likely go to another car. Sometimes I will use the example of a pickpocket. You know, when you go into crowds, do you put your wallet in a more difficult place for a pickpocket to reach? If you're carrying a purse or pocketbook, do you keep it in front of you and wrap tightly and so on? And I'll usually get the same answer. In other words, it's not that the pickpocket necessarily is targeting them, but the pickpocket is looking for somebody whose pocket or pocketbook to pick. That's what pickpockets do, just as car thieves steal cars. They don't necessarily target their particular victim. Now, of course, there are some instances where a car thief may be doing something on demand because a particular car is needed. A pickpocket may have seen somebody leaving the bank and carrying wads of money and observing where they place it on their person. But in general, a car thief will steal any car that he or she can, take it to a chop shop, and acquire the necessary money that will make their thievery worthwhile. I believe that it's also very important to apply the same kind of thinking and recognition when you're dealing with people who have mistreated you and in some cases traumatized you. So the notion of dealing with abusers of any type is to place the blame back on their shoulders. In other words, what do rapists do? They rape. They rape people who are convenient to be raped. What do individuals who are child abusers do? They abuse children. Now, if you happen to be abused by someone who operates in that way, the chances are it's because you were convenient to that abuser. It had nothing to do with you other than the fact that you were in that place at that particular time. Consequently, I think it's very critical to think in terms of, you know, what does that have to do with me? If some other child were in the child abuser's area, would that person not have been abused? If another person was walking down the street that was relatively deserted and a rapist came along, would that rapist have thought, no, I'm not going to rape her because I know this other person is more deserving of it? People who are working for critical employers will be criticized because that's what critical employers do. And if you had an ineffective parent, do you honestly think that they would be more effective if they had a different daughter or son? The answer probably is certainly not. In essence, people who blame themselves for having been abused are taking the abuser off the hook, and it's important to not do so. At the same time, if we are adults, we can learn from certain experiences. If you've had your car stolen while you left it unlocked because you were running into a store for a brief purchase, chances are you won't do it a second time. But it is important to recognize that some people who have been abused and have been traumatized were not in a position to make any kind of right or wrong judgment. They were simply abused. Nobody can reasonably blame a young child for having been abused by a sex or emotional or physical abuser. But by the same token, when we get to be adults, we can move toward not having that person control our thinking about ourselves any longer. Think in terms of the person who had the car stolen again. There's a reasonable chance that that person has driven hundreds and thousands of times and parked and probably in many cases locked his or her car. But even if they haven't, they've been successful in not getting it stolen. Once it gets stolen, you change certain behaviors. Same applies when dealing with any kind of mistreatment, particularly among adults. If you've got a particularly critical friend, employer, coworker, or so on, you must either learn to disregard those criticisms if they're unwarranted, or learn from them, or move on to having different associates, or think in terms of applying for different kinds of jobs. The thing that we must not do is confirm that person's criticisms by letting that person control the way that we feel about ourselves. And that's why I think it's very important to ask that question, what does that have to do with me? Because it allows personal growth and it allows dealing with the issue from a position of strength rather than feeling negative about ourselves. I hope this has been helpful to those of you who may have had to deal with difficult situations of the type that I described. Finally, I would like to note for those professionals who may be listening to this podcast that in your working with patients, I consider this question to be an important first step. As we know, there are many types of approaches to psychotherapy that are very effective if the therapist is very effective. And so I don't believe that this question requires abandoning your own beliefs, whether they be from a psychodynamic standpoint, to a cognitive behavioral standpoint, or any other type of approach to psychotherapy. I believe that the question has relevance as a starting point regardless of your therapeutic approach, and I believe that it will help your patients deal with issues of abuse, trauma, and mistreatment from a positive and stronger standpoint. Again, my purpose and the purpose of the Mental Health Gym is to build strength so that people can move forward and do goal achieving. This has been Dr. Ron Kaiser with your August 2011 podcast. I hope that you found it helpful, and we'll be speaking with you again next month.